The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
To the Lotus Place tonight. It is Wednesday, March the 2nd. We're already in March. This year is just flying by, people. I hope that you are working on your goals for 2016. I hope that you are living your life like it's golden in 2016, because it is time for us to do something different. Stop with the old madness and the insanity. Change your life. Get your life right. Get your mind right. And that's what it is. So let me welcome everyone in tonight. We have a really good show tonight. Great topic. Tonight we will discuss emergency managers and the suspension of democracy. We're talking about dirty waters. Not just in Flint, St. Joseph Parish in Louisiana has red colored water, and it's kind of thick looking too, like it has an E. coli in it, just like Flint water. See, they don't talk about the E. coli in the water. They just keep talking about the lead in the water. Oh, there's lead in the water, there's lead. Don't forget about the E. coli that's in the water also. Let's talk about that. So St. Joseph Parish also has discolored, contaminated water. I'll play a clip from a person speaking from St. Joseph Parish. She's talking about how they can't do anything with the water, but I think like wash the floors if they want to even do that with water. I think it's New Jersey, somewhere in New Jersey, the water has tested or high levels of lead. And also, what was it, about 3 or 4 days ago, Jackson, Mississippi. My goodness. I mean, so what's really going on? Why is the water so dirty? And what is the damn EPA doing? I mean, these people in these high-profile positions. And I remember when Obama was running, he was all talking about the EPA and what the EPA was going to do and how we needed to fund the EPA. Well, hell, defund their ass because they hadn't been making sure the damn water clean. Oh, goodness gracious. So, dirty water. Let's also talk about what happened in Flint. What happened in Benton Harbor? What happened in Saginaw, Pontiac, Detroit? All of these primarily black cities under emergency managers. Laws, as if these people can't seem to get their money together. It's not that. It's that the money keeps getting pulled out of these black cities and transferred into other bank accounts or cities. So let's talk about that, the ultimate destruction of black cities. Reverend Pinckney was fighting tirelessly in Benton Harbor, fighting against Whirlpool. GMC was dumping their toxic waste in the Flint River. I wonder, should they pay reparations to the people of Flint? Let's talk about that. A lawsuit has been filed for the people in Flint because of all the problems that the people are having. Not only do the children have these cognitive disabilities, women are having miscarriages, people are having nervous breakdowns. So we really need to be mindful of what's going on in places like Flint, St. Joseph Parish, Jackson, Mississippi. could this be coming to a city near you? We also will have our hot topics tonight with Delta Cougar. Delta Cougar is going to bring us some hot topics and her tales from the crypt, Cougar Tales. And we will also have Mother Zola, Feather Light, bringing us a mind, body, and spirit, and her melanin and more. So call in and share your thoughts and comments, 641-715-3660. And the access code is 549032, press pound. Let me repeat that because we do want you to call in and share your thoughts and comments. 641-715-3660, access code 549032. And if you would like to speak, then just press star 61 and we'll get you right on in. So let me see. Let's see here. Let's see. Okay. Aja Zola. Mother Zola, are you there?
Featherlight is on the line.
Featherlight.
Namaste.
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 Oh, wow. Oh, let me open up King B's. My King B, what's up with ya? How you doing, King B?
I'm doing fine. How's everybody doing?
Hi, King B. I'm doing fantabulous.
Great.
Fantastic. I want to start out with playing this quick clip. And I think, King B, I think you may have your TV or your radio up, and we're kind of hearing that in the background.
Okay.
You mind kind of lowering that?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to start out and play this quick clip, and then King B is going to give us a Super Tuesday update. Then Mother Zola, I think you have a mind, body, and spirit. We'll have Delta Cougar come on with her hot topics. But let me just play this. Let me play this one right here. Give me just one second. Let me get up. Oh, yes. And did you guys hear about Melissa Harris Perry? So she either like left NBC or they pushed her out. We'll play a little clip from Yvette Carnell. Yeah.
I would choose the latter.
Me too, King B. Me too.
Okay. Let's play this just to kind of open up because we want to keep this topic going. And I'm so glad that other people are keeping this topic going also. I listened to this station in Detroit. It's a black-owned TV radio station called TV33WHPR. And today they were asking for people in Flint to call in and just share their comments and thoughts and just keep people informed about what's going on. So check that out. It's a black station, black-owned station in Detroit. And so they, too, have been keeping the story going and keeping us informed. But let me just play this quick clip on how the Flint water crisis started and what is this mess? What is all this mess going on? All right.
I never would have thought I'd be drinking contaminated water surrounded by the Great Lakes.
Flint, Michigan is having a water crisis. Currently, the National Guard and Red Cross are handing out bottled water and filters to residents. On January 16th, President Obama declared a federal emergency in Flint, freeing up $5 million in federal aid. According to the EPA, the maximum safe level of lead in drinking water is 0 parts per billion. 5 is the threshold for concern. Flint water has been regularly tested above 100 ppb by a Virginia Tech research team. And in at least one home, the team measured above 13,000. 5,000 is considered toxic waste by the agency.
That water is much more corrosive, and that corrosivity is causing the lead to leach out of lead service lines, galvanized pipe, and copper lines that use lead solder.
Flint, like many once booming industrial towns in Michigan, has been in so much financial trouble that the state appointed emergency managers to take care of the budget and rein in spending.
Here's the plan.
In 2013, those emergency managers authorized a move to join the Karagandhi Water Authority.
Well, as the emergency manager appointed to Flint in, I think it was 2013, it was my responsibility to oversee the decision that had been made regarding the transfer from Flint, from DWSD to the Karagandhi Water System.
At the end of 2013, 3 years before the new pipeline was finished, Detroit notified Flint it would stop selling the city water by April 2014. So Flint needed water. It chose the nearby Flint River. When the water source was switched, an additive that prevents corrosion of pipes wasn't used, despite being mandated by federal law. It would have cost approximately $100 a day. Almost immediately, complaints came in of discolored, poor-tasting, and foul-smelling water. In September 2015, out of suspicion of high levels of lead in the water, Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, a local doctor, began testing the blood of local children.
This research is concerning. These results are concerning. And when our national guiding organizations tell us primary prevention is the most important thing and that lead poisoning is potentially irreversible, then we have to say something.
She found that the lead levels had doubled on average and even tripled in some children. Virginia Tech professor Mark Edwards claimed that the corrosiveness of the water was causing lead to leach into the water supply. It's gotten so dire that a family fun night was held at a Flint elementary school to encourage children to have their blood tested. A major concern is that about half of Flint's roughly 40,000 homes are at least 50 years old, and many have old lead pipes or lead solder. The city has switched back to its original water source with Detroit, but the city's water still has high levels of lead, and now the number of Legionnaires' disease infections, which has spread through water, has increased dramatically. And that recent $5 million from the federal government? It's a start. But Michigan Governor Rick Snyder's application for federal aid suggested it may take as much as $100 million to fix Flint's water.
Okay, so, I mean, most of the homes in Flint are over 50 years old, as you heard that clip state, the reporter. And you know what, like I said, in Detroit and in Flint, once you leave outside of downtown, I mean, you can just look at it and see. It's like the clock, especially in Flint, it's like the clock stop in 1950, for real.
Wow.
The homes look like, yeah, they were built 1930, 1940, and that's it. No more new homes after that. So It's heartbreaking. Let's welcome in Icy Hot. Icy Hot, how are you? You're going to love this show. We're talking about environment.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Icy Hot.
Hello, Icy Hot.
Hi. Andy. Great. So tonight we're talking about emergency managers, the suspension of democracy, as well as, of course, oh, yes. And we're keeping this on the table, this whole dirty water situation. I said, how did you hear that in Jackson, Mississippi, their water is contaminated?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I did not.
Deja vu all over again, where the city managers didn't tell the people that the water that they were drinking was contaminated until months later.
Absolutely. Oh. And they're still telling them that it's okay to drink the water except for pregnant women and babies. So
imagine
if pregnant women and babies can't drink the water, then goddammit, I don't want to drink it either. Okay? And also in St. Joseph Parish, Louisiana, their water is reddish, rusty reddish color, and it's like bubbly. It's bubbly. It looks thick and foamy. So I guess it has like some E. coli in it also.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, these people should call up to to Minnesota and get the Minnesota the chemicals or the menu for making that water clear and appear as though it's good water, because we are contaminated with mercury. I wondered ever since I moved here, why did I get sick every time I drink the water? And that's been like 28 years ago. I've never been able to drink the water here.
And where's this?
It's always made me sick.
Where's this water at?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Lord have mercy. And
that's been that long ago. The water's clear, but something's wrong with it.
See, there's a thing I'm very concerned about.
Mercury.
Yeah, and not only that, the plumbing system in the governed black areas, they are allowing those pipes to rust and be corroded. And a number of reasons that could lead to having bad health is that they do not want the black community to be whole, to be healthy. They have
right.
a desire for blacks to die a slow, painful death because they have no more usage for us. We are in the same category that Marcus Garvey warned us about becoming, a surplus race of people. They don't need, you see how they destroyed the manufacturing plants, making cars in Flint, Detroit, parts of the, you know, all those areas where we're building cars, they're now contracting out to cheap banana republics. They pay, even in Mexico, they're building American cars.
Well, how did that happen? Go back to the history on how did that all happen, though. Why did these plants leave Flint and Pontiac, Kansas?
Well, just
how did it happen?
You got a man named Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Who introduced this thing called cheap labor. We're talking about no concern about what consequences of his action would be on the working man here in America that voted for this man, figured that he was truly a righteous man, when the record said that he was everything but a righteous man.
Do you really think it's the personal person? Or do you think it's the system that's set in place that dictates to these people what they are going to do and what they're not going to do? I don't think it's a person per se, because I was looking at Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and this woman, and she's the chair of the Democratic Committee, and this lady now is going along with all those payday loan interest rates, which is like 300-some% profit for those people. She is doing what's called the co-author of that. Now, here's a Democrat. Now, that sounds like a Republican, doesn't it?
Sure. Well, listen.
And so I think it's a system that's in place, and it really doesn't make any difference. And these government officials that we have are corrupt, and they're puppets to something else. I'm not going to name that something else, but I would say it is some type of oligarchy. It's not these personal people. They can't do anything with it. It's been out of control. It's been spinning out of control for many years.
Listen, Dick Gregory said that George H.W. forgot that Bill Clinton was a CIA operative from the time Clinton was even in college. So a man that's already contaminated with CIA philosophy, he has the skill of deceiving people, and black people are easily deceived because we believe whatever the white man says is being truthful. Richard Pryor even said, I joke about it, but he was very serious. He said, white man said so, it must be true. We do not care to know when a white person is lying to us, or we can't even pick up, read between the lines and the lies. So you have black people in trouble right now, deep trouble, because a white woman named Hillary Clinton is desirous of bamboozling black again, and that she's going to be the savior for the black and poor people. And the record says otherwise.
Well, what do you think about?
I don't.
What is?
Go on. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mother Hatter, and I want to ask all of you, what do you think about what's his name, Donald Trump? So-called response to David Duke being a Klan member.
Well, I don't know that people are bamboozled by Hillary Clinton. You know, what's the option here? What's the option? That's all I have to say about that one, Canty. And so what's the option?
What do you mean as far as the name of
Bernie
Sanders?
Well, you're saying, you think, yes, I'm saying as far as the two. If you are in the Democrat venue, but if you're in the camp of the Republicans, what's the option?
The idea that our people will go along with the flow and not bothering to be clear about one's record. The Clinton's record.
Do you really think the record, the people don't know about all of the Haiti stuff?
They do know about it.
People know about it. But what is the option?
Wait, if they did know, then they would be very cautious about giving this woman all that support that she needs. There is also a thing that we have a problem of making concession demands. We don't make any concession demands. We just give this woman a free blank check. And
That's true, Trampy.
I don't know the concession demands. I would call it, we don't have any accountability after they're in there, and we're blown off, and we don't count.
My dear, you don't put them in there before you make concession demands before they get your vote. It's like a contractual agreement. You want to tell the
yeah. What are you gonna do for us?
And you want to write and have it written down what you are demanding. See, Adam Clayton Powell would have the Powell Amendment, and he would have so many things that he want his colleagues to do for him before he would give his support to signing a bill. We don't make concession demands.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with that part totally, but are we in a different kind of venue now from those years? What is the option?
The option is we don't do, first of all, we don't have a black media that we should have had.
We're doing that. The playing field is very different now. I agree with you with what should happen, but it can happen because we're just totally different than we were. The venue and the arena, the fighting arena is different, and we've got to come up with some different strategies. We can't use those old strategies for this stuff today that's happening. We really can't. I don't think so.
It was good. Because now we don't have no clue as to how devious this enemy is. I always maintain with friends like the country.
You know. Don't you know?
Enemies.
Don't you know, Ken?
Huh?
Don't you know the deviousness?
Oh, yeah. It's like...
Okay, if you know, then some more people know is what I'm saying.
But those who know don't say. Those who say don't know, as Pop would say. So there are blacks who are faded ignorance, and they're apolitical. See, we are religious, but we're not ethical. That's our problem. And we don't have these think tank meetings in these churches where blacks can have a forum to have community activists speak to elevate the mind to shape our thought processes so we can have a better idea how the game of politics is played. See, we know more about playing chess than we know about dealing with politics, how the game of politics
They know, and they're having the meetings. You're just not invited. They're secret meetings. They know.
But the ones who have these secret meetings are these selected officials that are meeting with the enemy, and they're being dictated as to how they're going to behave to get their monies for re-election. It's right here in Brooklyn, where I live at, the largest borough in the city of New York. Condos are going up right in my neighborhood, like weeds throughout the Bed-Stuy area.
Throughout the country.
Condo-wise, just in the largest borough where you have homelessness, pronounced homelessness, unbelievable. But the politicians are clueless, rendering them to be useless. It's a national epidemic.
Canton, let me play this Michigan Emergency Management clip here, and then we'll take a quick break. Let's play this.
Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, as many know, recently signed into law legislation making Michigan the nation's 24th right-to-work state. But a development which received far less ink and airtime is the fact that painfully early on December 14, 2012, about 48 hours after the right-to-work law became reality, the Michigan legislature approved legislation to push Michigan right back into the same basic emergency manager system that the voters had just finished repealing through their approval of Proposition 1 last November. These emergency manager laws operate in several states, so Michigan's actions could deeply affect populist efforts everywhere to defang or dissolve the emergency management system that many see as the road to local tyranny via state-appointed autocrats, whose emergency management task is portrayed as a heroic rescue mission for cash-strapped localities. Of course, not all emergency management actions are necessarily bad. Some localities, vexed by corruption or mismanagement, do need help, but the price paid for such tight-fisted management appears to be uncomfortably high. Influential West Michigan activist Reverend Ed Pinckney, who helped get Prop 1 on the ballot in the first place, says the right to work law's passage was a subtle form of retaliation against voters for overturning the emergency management law. The good governor, a self-described venture capitalist, championed the emergency management law while unions opposed it. Reverend Pinckney lives in the emergency manager city of Benton Harbor, and a new emergency manager was just introduced there. The former one, Joseph Harris, who previously managed Detroit finances, was replaced. But the well-known words, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, coined by the WHO, come to mind among many citizens in Benton Harbor. Meanwhile, more people are realizing that right-to-work provides an out for U.S. employers so they can pay lower wages and bring the domestic job market on par with lower-paying foreign locales. Surely, unions do have some drawbacks, such as teachers' unions and other unions that protect mediocre educators and other public workers, thereby downplaying or ignoring individual merit on the job. But others say unions uphold the wages and benefits needed to give the average worker a shot at upward mobility to forge a stronger middle class. The emergency manager law that Michigan voters repealed as Public Act 4 was broadly disliked specifically because, under it, a state-appointed emergency manager could not only dissolve the authority of city councils, school boards, and other elected bodies, this manager also could become the local viceroy with broadsword power to dissolve or rewrite union contracts and dictate budgets. So emergency managers, if left unfettered, can establish a virtual fiefdom that suppresses the basic democratic structure. After Public Act 4's repeal, Michigan temporarily reverted to an old 1990 emergency management law. However, just as voters breathed sighs of relief from Public Act 4's defeat, their joy was abruptly thwarted by a brand new emergency management reform. That new EM law, as it's known for short, seems more acceptable than Public Act 4's terms, such as the part that gives troubled cities a choice of getting an emergency manager or choosing other options, such as Chapter 9 bankruptcy or perhaps mediation. But as Reverend Pinckney told this reporter about the new management law, I understand that you cannot vote it down, quote, end quote. Indeed, if the new law goes bad for the public, the voters cannot even repeal it because the new law carries a budget appropriation enabling the state itself to pay for any emergency managers assigned to school districts and cities rather than forcing the locality to pick up the tab like before. Is that really an acceptable trade-off? Well, the new law upholds at least some of an emergency manager's powers to void or rewrite union contracts, meaning that a key corporate tool was upheld to suppress unionism, and the new law can be amended to broaden emergency management powers over time, right while being shielded from a voter veto, essentially forever. In this way, it appears the tables were definitely turned on the Michigan electorate. Back to you.
All right, and that was our clip on emergency manager law. We have some more clips to play, but right now let's just take a quick break, and then we'll come back with Mother Zola with some quotes for us to help us get our minds right. So let's just take a quick break and stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Beep.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
All right. Feather Light, you have a quote for us?
Yes, I do. Let's see. Hold on a second. I have to go and recharge my phone. Look like it.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
All right.
Here we go. Intuition. Oh, by the way, I'm going to give some love the body tips on skincare. So take this time to get a pen and paper, because you may want to write down something that you may find interesting, that you may want to try. Okay. Intuition. Intuition is the GPS of the soul. Is yours turned on? Intuition is seen with the soul. Know its signs. It speaks to you not through the mind, but through the body. Truth, recognition, and love will send you chills. Okay? So that's truth, recognition, and love. You get chills in your body. Danger will send anxiety. Okay, that's your body talking to you. Listen to it. Negativity will send a heavy heart and stomach issues. You ever just get a stomach ache out of nowhere, it seems? It's your body talking to you. Trust your spirit and its signals. It only wants to keep you safe. We are not human beings having a spiritual experience here on earth. We are spirits having a human experience here on earth. And we have these bodies that we're using so that we can have this experience on earth, because our spirit is too wide, too broad. It cannot just walk around. So it has to be encapsulated in a body. So how we take care of this body has a lot to do with how we feel while we're here, how we look while we're here, just our overall health and well-being. So that is our Love the Body segment of mind, body, and spirit, because sometimes we just take for granted, you know, the body is the body. We go out in the air and we out in the world, and there's all types of toxic fumes that are in the air, and they hit our face, because most of our time, you know, our bodies are covered up, but our face is always exposed. And then we come home and we may throw a little water on it, and then we will go to sleep. So I want to ask this question to the ladies, but you know, the men can answer too, because men need to have good skincare as well.
We do.
I met a guy a few months ago in the Lowe's parking lot, and he said he was from California. And in our conversation, as we talked on the phone, he was talking about how he eats healthy. He had avocados growing in the trees out in his yard. He just walk out and just eat an avocado. And he talked a little about the pineal gland, you know. That's always interesting, mm-hmm. you know, to hear somebody yeah. talk about that.
That's one thing I loved about living in Miami, Florida. There were certain streets that you could just drive through, and
you can just pull over and just take out a box and just fill up your car, fill up the box with avocados or mangoes. They were just in the street. And people wanted you to come and take some of those avocados and mangoes because they were like all in the streets, just like leaves in the fall.
Wow. Amazing. But as I talked with him and I saw his face, I said, I can tell that he eats healthy because it's reflected in your skin, what you're putting in your body. You know, you are what you eat. So with that said, that's where we come into the love of the body. We talk about things that you can do and should do for your body. Not just get up in the morning and take it out into the world and then bring it back home and throw it in the bed. So I've heard people say of others, oh, she looks good for her age. Oh, don't she look good for that?
Okay. Arjazola, did we lose you?
I think so.
Arjazola. Okay, so I think we lost you, but... Yay, thank you for that. Love the body. Thank you so much. So, Aja, when you get your little line together, just pop back on. Canty and Icy Hot, I want to ask you about Donald Trump's response to not being familiar with what's his name? David Duke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Well, I just think he's just the biggest liar, like all the rest of them can be. And he gets confused on things sometimes about what it is he's already answered and said. And because he has so been sheltered with a lot of money, in their heads, these people can think that this is really the truth and that they can get away with not telling the truth.
Well,
and never, it's like a sense of being out of touch with reality sometimes. That's what I think. I think he's just kind of out of touch with reality. He has what's called affluenza.
Affluenza.
I feel, look, we got to know the pedigree of this man. He's a third generation German. His grandfather had their names Americanized to be more accepted into this country. It was originally called the Dorf family. All right? He not only had the name changed, but Trump studied the philosophy and theology of white supremacy. He speaks in codes. That's part of the thing called legalese. White people believe in that legalese. That's natural law and military science. Targeted. People who are of color, black in particular, are targeted, the most targeted. Mother Dunning, she mentioned to me, and she sent it in my email. I haven't received it yet, but a couple went on a date, left the children with the grandparents. They were found on the side of the road sleeping, and this cop shot them to death.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see a black cop doing it to a white civilian. It's not going to happen. But see, we are so easily persuaded that they must be doing something wrong. Police wouldn't just kill you like that. And we will make excuses for when there is shown up atrocities after atrocities. And we have no desire to understand that Donald Trump is the epitome of evil. He's a very dangerous man that he's seen around the world as a dangerous, ignorant man. And this is the best that the Republicans could produce to lead this nation. Imagine this man will be in the White House because, look, you have Republican governors that would not let Hillary eclipse Trump. It's not going to happen. So I just know that Donald Trump is a liar. Worst, my late mother always said, the worst thing in the world, a thief is bad. The worst thing in the world is a liar. This man is a liar. It's a pathological liar. And that the media poo-poos this guy. So they don't put his feet to the fire. So they created this guy. Now this guy is way beyond what they thought he was going to be. And he's a monster that is on the loose. And he is, white people gravitate to him because he is speaking their language about bringing back the control of white supremacy.
You're absolutely right about that.
They're losing their grip. And by the year is 2034. Most blacks don't even recognize 2034 is when white people will be officially declared a minority in this country. And white men in particular are going crazy.
Going crazy. Hey, Kenby, let me play this clip and then we'll take a call. We have a caller and we'll pick back up on some more of our hot topics. Let me give out the number before I play this clip. 641-715-3660. And the code is 641. No, I apologize. The participant code is 549032. Press pound. So let me say that again. 641-715-3660 is the number to dial. And the participant code is 549032 pound. And then press *61 if you would like to share a comment. Let's listen to this clip on E.M. Darnell Early, former E.M. Darnell Early.
Detroit Water, Flint River Water. Well, as the emergency manager of appointed to Flint I think it was 2013, it was my responsibility to oversee the decision that had been made regarding the transfer from Flint from DWSD to the Caradonia Water System. That plan was already in place when I got there. In fact, it was a local decision, which was a condition made by the county drain commissioner at that time in order for them to be a part of the new system. But I don't want to focus on what happened back in 2013. I think it's important that we mobilize all resources that we can to fix the problem. One of the things that I did do while I was there was I had a consultant come in and take a look at the initial findings based on the difficulty for treating river water. But that was an unintended consequence. And hopefully we can move forward and do what's best for the people of the city of Flint.
Did you sign off on the changeover?
That was all done before I got there.
So you had no input on that at all?
Not at all. It fell to me to implement the plan that had been approved by the council, and part of that plan included using the Flint River as a water source. And that was a part of the organizational change in the water supply from Detroit to Flint River, Caradonia, using Flint River in the interim.
Did you think it might be dangerous?
We've got to go.
Well, it didn't fall to me to second guess that issue. I mean, there's always concerns when you're treating water. River water is difficult, more difficult to treat, but it wasn't my role to act as the person responsible for determining what that involved.
The resolution called for the switchover to KWA, but as far as I'm concerned, it didn't say anything about Flint water. Was that your decision?
No, it was not my decision. That was a part of the plan that was presented to me, which at the time included using the Flint River as a water source. If you'll read the executive order signed by the previous emergency manager, it speaks to upgrading the treatment plant for the treatment of Flint River water. That was all in place before I got there.
So your hands are clean on this?
Well, what I'm saying is that it was a local decision made, and we'll do what we can to make sure that, as the state is concerned, to make sure that that problem is addressed.
In retrospect, should you have been more aggressive about it?
Well, I think in retrospect, if we all had 20/20 hindsight, we'd do a lot of things different. But I think it was important at the time to make sure that the people of Flint had a water source, because the 50-year contract with DWSD had terminated.
Did you terminate that contract early?
No, I did not terminate it early. It ran out after 50 years. What happened was it was terminated by DWSD because of the decision that was made to go to KWA. Again, with the Flint River as a water source in the interim, which was decided before I got there.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
The changes continue to come fast and furious at Flint City Hall. In just less than 24 hours, the city has a new emergency financial manager and a new city administrator. City Council getting briefed on the changes right now. NBC 25's Brittany Shannon live at City Council. Brittany?
Well, thanks, Bill. Tensions are definitely running high right now as Flint City Council has called a special meeting to discuss the recent appointment of Ed Kurtz as the emergency financial manager for the city. Now, this is the first time that City Council has met since November of 2011. Council and Mayor Dane Walling's power being restored following a state decision Wednesday to suspend Public Act 4 and the now former emergency manager, Mike Brown. The city now operates under Public Act 72 and under the direction of emergency financial manager Ed Kurtz. However, there is resistance from city council members and residents who say the city of Flint does not meet the specific financial criteria under Act 72.
I believe that it's time, and I believe the residents of the city of Flint believe that it's time that the elected officials that have been elected in this community get back to managing the city and managing their tax dollars.
Now, we are told that there could be another council meeting this Monday, so stand by for that information. And we'll, of course, bring you more information later tonight after the Olympics.
Okay, so let's just run briefly through these emergency managers in Flint. Let's see.
Up on the phone.
A caller from 404, and I just opened up your mic, King B.
Yeah.
Caller from 404, we'll take you in just a second. Let me just run through these emergency managers. Okay, so from July 2002 through June 2004 in Flint, the emergency manager was Ed Kurtz.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then in 2011, December 2011, up until August 2012, Michael Brown was the emergency manager. Okay. And in 2012, from August 2012 up until July 2013, Ed Kurtz became the emergency manager again. And then July 2013, October, up until October 2013, Michael Brown became the emergency manager again. Then, from October 2013 up until January 2015, Darnell Early was the emergency manager. And then from January 2015, then Darnell Early became the emergency manager in Detroit. But back to Flint, January 2015 up until August 30th, 2015, Jerry Ambrose was the emergency manager in Flint. So we heard Darnell Early say that the plan to switch was already in place when he became emergency manager. Caller from 404, what do you have to say?
Greetings to you all.
Greetings.
Greetings, Sarah.
Good to hear from you.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, ladies, King B, as well as Icy Hawk, as well as Delta, and Aja. I think that's who it is. That's why I left out Aja.
Yeah.
Yes. Greetings. Let me start off by, first off, to go back to you with your mind and body. I was going to comment on that really quickly, and I'm glad that you were talking about that with our intuition. And that is something that most of us, as you said, our navigation system, that sometimes we don't follow. We like to travel blindly.
Right.
And I'm glad, because I'm guilty of that many times. And many times when I do not listen to my intuition, I always end up in trouble. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. But as you were saying, you know, yes, ladies, but as you were saying that this vehicle that you're traveling in, this body, this body, we are part of the cosmos system because we make up the four elements of the universe within the body that our, the light being, which is what the spirit is, that is inhabiting this body. And that's what a lot of us don't, you know, we kind of forget that, you know, we are all part of this universe because we make up the four elements. We make up, the body is made up of the four elements. Earth, wind, fire, and water. So we are the universe. We are just a small microcosm of that, of the universe that is us.
Exactly.
Yes, yes, ma'am. But to get back to what you were saying with these emergency managers between Flint and Detroit, were all of these emergency managers, were they all black?
One.
Ed Kurtz and Michael Brown. Let me see. Ed Kurtz is white. Let me see. Michael Brown. I want to say Michael Brown is white, too. Let me. I'll look that up, Sarah, while you're commenting.
Okay.
Let me see. Michael Brown.
But the But the last person that you just mentioned, or the person that was speaking, that is emergency, he is black. Just like the last guy that left Detroit, he was black. You see, white
people
play.
Michael Brown is white. Yeah, Michael Brown is white.
He was wearing Flint or Detroit?
He was in Flint. Michael Brown.
Flint. I think the only one that was in Flint that was black is the one died early.
Yeah, the last guy. You see, this is how white people do it. Like I said, they play these Jedi mind tricks with us. Because it all started under these white people who start putting this emergency management. They came in and they did their dirt. And in order to extract themselves so that we're going to blame this black man to say, okay, it's all his fault, they put him in there. And the man said in the interview, and like I was telling King B the last time we spoke a couple weeks ago on the early show, was that this man came in at the last minute and they left him. It's like a bank robber that robbed the bank. And he just left sitting in the getaway car. I'd have not a clue as to what the heck happened.
Exactly. Great way to say it.
It sure is.
He's in the getaway car. Don't have the keys to start the car. With an empty sack that has the bank information on the sack, but he didn't get none of the money.
No gas in the car. No gas.
Yeah. No gas, no keys. But he got the check from the bank that showed that he was a part of this bank robbery team.
Look at this, y'all.
But that's what white people do. No,
they sure do.
That's what white people do. They left him there because we're going to focus on this black man and we're going to blame him, but we're going to forget all the others that came before him and did all of the dirt. And left him there. He's going to get some of the blame. But 90% of it's the people before him. Because he just
before
came
him.
In there. He just came in there when it was already turned it over.
But look at this well-kept secret issue that is enough to throw the book at all of the previous emergency managers from the governor on down. General Motors made the announcement to Flint City that they could no longer use their water because the water was corroding the engine parts. That's metro. The people were still drinking this poisonous water when General Motors had pulled out from using the Flint River because it was corroding their engine. So how come Mr. Early, the old saying, the buck stops here. If he didn't know, he should have known. The governor...
Well... It's not meant that he should have known. Is he a resident of Flint? Does he live in the city? Because what General Motors is doing as far as not using the river water is not something that the rest of the resident might do. For all of their concern, they could be assuming that, okay, we got this plant in here. Everybody's using the same water. Not knowing that they're not, unless you work in General Motors at a very high top level, you would not know that they switched off using that water.
Well, also, the state office buildings in Flint, a year before the people in Flint was told officially that the water was poisonous, they were pumping in fresh water into the state office building, and I understand.
And they brought in water coolers to GM plant for the.
And I also heard that
when they went back home, though, they were drinking that dirty water.
The faith-based churches was also getting fresh water pumped into the faith-based churches. So there's a whole lot stuff that was going on in Michigan. But the fact remains, you got a governor who is a slick-talking racist that was hell-bent on destroying four cities, Detroit, Benton Harbor, Saginaw, and, of course, Flint, where black people have a large concentration.
And Detroit.
Yeah, I mentioned Detroit. And,
well, five cities. It's five cities altogether, five black cities that that have come on there in Detroit.
Okay, so,
because we saw with Detroit, Flint, Saginaw, Benton Harbor, and what was the other city there? There was one more that he left out.
Pontiac,
yeah.
Okay.
Now,
but you know what? It seems to me, General Motors, they knew about the water and they were taking good care of the water because they were the ones that polluted the water in the first place.
They did.
Now, as Don Early said on there, the decision was already made when he got there, and it was made under Kirk. And that's why it was important for us to discuss this from the actual correct information on the timelines of all of the people that were there, because anybody with, you know, that's what you have to find out. Who made the decision under which manager, and then that's really the responsible party along with the governor of that state. And I noticed today they're going to be starting the recall of the election of the governor.
Yeah, I know he would, but you see, he not only should be recalled, he ought to be arrested for conspiracy, for corruption, and above all, environmental racism. Because
it is criminal. It's criminal what he's done. It's really domestic terrorism. So I don't know why the right people aren't in there dealing with him. It's domestic terrorism. He's terrorized these people environmentally. It's criminal. Now, if we go out here and do something to people, it could be one person like this where we know something's poison and we give them poison and make them drink it. They have no choice. What is that called?
Hey.
He has assaulted a whole community.
What if ISIL had poisoned a major city's water? That would be considered a terrorist act.
That's what I'm saying. The man is a domestic terrorist.
He knows he's a terrorist. This is called premeditation. Because when you deliberately plan and systematically carry out poison because...
Right. That's conspiracy.
That's why it's called premeditation. Because you switch water off. You make sure that you weren't drinking that water. You trucked in water. This is all planning. This is why it's called premeditation. Because this was all an orchestrated plan to make sure that you were not going to be consuming this poison water. You were not going to be bathing in it. But a targeted audience who you want to be killed off, they're the ones who were subject to be to that poison water. So it's premeditation.
Right.
Yes. Correct.
Absolutely. Let me play this other clip. Give me just a second. Let me get this clip up. Oh, not to jump off of that, but I do want to get this clip in about Melissa Harris Perry. That's also on the table tonight, and then we can come right back to our emergency manager talk. Let me play this one by I think this is Yvette Carnell. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, let's see. Come on, play for us now.
Good afternoon, Breaking Brown family. Good afternoon, Your Black World family. This is Yvette Carnell, and you already know what I want to talk about today. It is something that I have predicted for a very long time. Melissa Harris Perry it looks like she may be out. She says she's not coming. She doesn't want to be anybody's mammy. She is not some little brown doll. And a long time ago, if you all will remember, Breaking Brown family, Your Black World family, I said there was going to be a purge of the Negro Whisperers.
Okay, before we get into the rest of that clip, let's just take a quick break, and then we'll come right back to
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Good afternoon, Breaking Brown family. Good afternoon, Your Black World family. This is Yvette Carnell, and you already know what I want to talk about today. It is something that I have predicted for a very long time. Melissa Harris Perry it looks like she may be out. She says she's not coming. She doesn't want to be anybody's mammy. She is not some little brown doll. And a long time ago, if you all will remember, Breaking Brown family, Your Black World family, I said there was going to be a purge of the Negro whisperers, of the Black explainers, on MSNBC. And, you know, to a larger extent, you know, everywhere. Because these people were only needed while the Brown president was in office. So long as Obama was in office, we needed someone to say, what are the Negroes thinking? What is the Negro president saying? Can you explain that? Interpret the Negro for us. And nobody needs that anymore. So when Obama, the way Melissa Harris Perry and Torrey, you know, and you know, Joy Reid had a show at one time. The Dorian Warren, the little guy, does he still have his show? I don't think so. You had even Karen Finney had a show. You saw Al Sharpton get moved over to the weekend. It was even before all this stuff started happening, though. I told you that we were going to have a purge of the Negro whisperers. We were going to have a purge of these people because they were only needed for a Black president. We're not going to have a Black president anymore. We're either going to have probably Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, the way things are looking right now, if they turn out the way we think they're going to turn out. So, you know, why does MSNBC need Melissa Harris Perry? They already have Rachel Maddow in case, you know, Hillary Clinton gets elected. They have a centrist white woman, you know, almost, you know, Eisenhower centrist in Rachel Maddow. They don't need Melissa Harris Perry. They don't need Torrey. These people were good in terms of the demographic of the person that was in the White House. And we'll probably never have another Black president in our lifetime. So that's pretty much finished. And, you know, I saw Melissa Harris Perry. I read the New York Times article. I put up a blurb about it, you know, on breakingbrown.com, along with the email that she sent her people at Nerdland. And there was something. There was one thing that she said that really struck out to me. She said, I love our show. I want it back. Well, here's the thing, Melissa Harris Perry. It was never our show. It was MSNBC's show. And they gave you some time and created a platform for you for as long as they needed you. And they paid you a good little amount of money to do that. That's it. There is no hour. Well, I mean, let me just say this. Any Black person who, and I'm not, everybody has, you know, most people have to work a job. So I'm not criticizing anybody who works a job. I see nothing wrong with having to work a job. That's just the life we live. But any Black person who works a job and thinks, you know, at a company that is a white company and thinks that they have some sort of security is a white person. You are a white person, or you think you're a white person. If you go to a white job and you think you have job security, you obviously think you're a white person. And that's the problem. Because you don't have job security. You are there for as long as whoever owns that company thinks you should be there. And they gave you a nice salary, Melissa Harris Perry. They didn't have to do any of that. They gave you a nice salary for as long as you were there to sort of tell Black people about how wonderful Obama was and then interpret Obama for white people who act like they didn't understand Obama, as if Obama spoke E.T. or something, as if he's some sort of alien who doesn't speak the Queen's English. But that's fine. You know, you took what you took. I would not have done it. But you did it, and that's fine. I would, you know, and if I did do it, I would take my coins and walk away. I wouldn't throw a fit. I would understand that this is the white man's place, this is his money. He runs this here plantation, and if he tells me to go, I gotta go. That is the rule for working on this, for working there. You know, that's just how it works. So for you to say, you know, this is our, you know, I want our show back. That was never our show, And I understand that you probably thought at a certain point, you said they weren't really returning your emails. They weren't really responding to you. You know, you had shown up at places where they were providing coverage, you know, for the election, and they wouldn't allow you to provide that coverage. And they wanted to kind of use you for Negro stuff like the South Carolina election. But they didn't really, from what I understand, they didn't really want you to editorialize. Well, you don't run the show. So I don't understand, like, it's like people get to these places and they don't understand, like, no, yeah, I can't run it anymore because it's not mine. It doesn't belong to me. Like, just because if you run up in somebody's house, just because they let you, you know, use the house, when they come home, they can tell you to get out the house. Or if they don't want to rent the house no more, they can tell you to get out the house. It's their house. So it was just very disappointing to me to see her kind of, you know, throw this kind of tantrum about, you know, the way that she felt MSNBC was sort of, you know, and probably she was probably right in terms of how they were isolating her and probably preparing to give her the boot. But I just don't know how you would not be prepared for that. I just don't understand how you did not see your role, you know, see your role as an explainer. And excuse me, but for me, you know, this goes back to ownership. You know, what do we own? We don't own anything. So the only thing we can do when the stuff goes down is kind of rant about how we weren't treated right and how we need to be treated better, you know, and kind of begging people to do right by us. And they did right by you for a few years, and your time is up. And your time is up because they said your time is up. You know, all this stuff about, well, you know, I don't understand why, you know, Melissa Perry is good for Black people and blah, 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 blah. Things have changed. Things have changed. And it never was about you. It was about this kind of TV being good for them. As long as Melissa Harris Perry is good for MSNBC, then she has a job. The minute that they decide that you're not good for MSNBC anymore, you don't have a job anymore. And because you work for them, you don't control that. So what you do the entire time, or what you should have been doing, you stack your coins and you're ready for the day that that happens. Now, you might negotiate something else for yourself, like a column or like the opportunity to show up and offer critique on future elections. Carve out a space for yourself in the future if that's where you want to be. But this idea that you leave and you throw a tantrum and you basically tell MSNBC that you ain't coming back to work, you know, unless MSNBC is feeling gracious and charitable towards you, which they might, because I see a lot of people acting up on Twitter, you know, oh, we stand with Melissa Harris Perry. So maybe they will be pushed and coerced in that way. But in the email they sent, you know, the heads of MSNBC basically said they were disappointed, which usually means you're out, you're finished. So I think this is about the end in terms of the Negro Whisperers and MSNBC. Who do we have left? I don't think Sharpton's going to last much longer. I don't see that we have much of anybody left at MSNBC. Now that we're going to have, you know, either a white man or a white woman, we're going to see more white men and more, you know, more white women, and we'll probably see more Latinos because they're the rising demographic, and that's just the way that works. So I'm kind of disappointed in Melissa Harris Perry for not seeing this coming and not plotting her way through this and not, you know, walking away from this, you know, with some grace, as opposed to talking about how she's not the mammy and she won't be used because of her race. You have been used because of your race. You got there because you were a Black woman. You got there because you put a lot of daggers in Cornel West and called him the Soul Patrol, and you put daggers in Tabitha Smiley, and, you know, and talked about how they, you know, in the pages of the Nation, and that's how you got here. Like, Obama is how you got here, and Obama is how you leave. And the idea that you didn't understand that is baffling to me. So that's all I want to say about it this evening. Let me know what you think in the comment section. And
ooh, she went in on Melissa Perry. But before we go to some comments on that clip, let me just read this briefly about Ed Kurtz, who was the emergency manager in Flint from July 2002 until 2004, and then once again in August 2012 up until July 2013. Okay. This is an article that came out today. Michigan Democrats said Wednesday that the state of Michigan blocked Flint from returning to Lake Huron water from the Detroit water system when it agreed to grant the city an emergency loan of $7 million in April 2015. The loan approved on April 29th of last year by the local emergency financial assistance loan board, and where do you get all this money from? And intended to erase the city's operating deficit so it could begin to emerge from state ordered emergency management, included conditions requiring that the city not return to the Detroit Water and Sewage Department as its source of drinking water. According to the records, the Michigan Democratic Party obtained under the Michigan Freedom of Information Act. Another condition was that Flint not leave the Carrigone Water Authority, a new pipeline to Lake Huron backed by Genesee County that Flint opted to join early in 2013, resulting in its split with Detroit as its source of drinking water. Former Flint emergency manager Ed Kurtz opted to draw water from the Flint River as an interim drinking water source. Let me read that again. Former Flint emergency manager Ed Kurtz opted to draw water from the Flint River as an interim drinking water source beginning in April of 2014. After Flint and Detroit could not agree on an interim price for Flint to continue receiving Detroit water while it waited for the pipeline slated for completion this summer to be built. Okay. So there we have it. Mm-hmm.
Well, they were just stuck like between the devil and the deep blue sea. They had no other way because, as you said, if they got this emergency loan, and one of the conditions of that loan was that they couldn't get Detroit water anymore. That was what it stated in that loan, that was one of their conditions in order for them to get this money. So the emergency manager turned around and said, okay, well, we're going to have to go into the Flint River, the poisonous water, and get it from out of there. So as you can see, with this stuff, when you start peeling back the different layers on this onion, you can see that this stuff was already, it was set up from the start. It was set up because the condition, the conditions with the loan. Because the loan specifies that we're going to give you this loan, even though they're making money up out of thin air, we're going to give you this money, but we're going to cut you, but you can't get Detroit water.
Mm-hmm.
So you either take the money in order to get yourself out of this financial management situation, and you find somewhere else to get your water. So that was the whole idea. The idea all along was to get these people and poison them. That was the whole idea. Put them in debt, and then you poison them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you notice that there was no wording that the water, the Flint River, was ever tested for to be fit for human consumption.
They already don't know that. If the water was brown, if you open up your tap and the water coming under the tap is brown, you got to test it. I don't need somebody to test no water if I'm running in my sink and it's coming out brown. I know water is supposed to be brown, at least not potable water.
But for the record, to say that the water was not tested, it leaves a very serious concern, that lack of concern, a part of the so-called emergency managers, that they didn't care to know if the Flint River was fit for human consumption, even though they knew that General Motors had pulled out from using the Flint River because of the parts to the engine was becoming corroded because of the Flint River, but yet they still had people drinking. You know, it just baffles the mind that it didn't dawn on them to say, wait a minute, if that's it for...
They knew. They knew. They knew exactly what they were doing. That's the whole point. Sure. These people knew what they were doing. GM was dumping their toxic waste in the Flint River. So that's why they turned around and said, no, we don't want that water because that's where we dump our toxic waste into. Now, Mother Dunning, she was supposed to call in tonight and give us a report because she said today there in Gulfport, Mississippi. They had a team come in, a team of lawyers, and they're trying to offer Gulfport like a settlement because of their contaminated water there. You know, because they're down there in Gulfport, now their water looks just like Flint, okay? I've seen
it
that
sure
myself.
Does.
It looks just like Flint water. Now,
well, I thought that was Gaucher. I didn't know it was Gulfport. I thought it was Gaucher.
Well, Gaucher. I call all of that the same because all of it.
It's Gulfport.
But you're right.
Gulfport's water is not like that, is it? See, this is the interesting thing about that area. Gaucher has that water like that, and you could be. That's why those little towns figures for me now. Those little towns run in and out and in and out.
Yes.
You can drive one block and you're in another little town.
Right.
They divided them up before that way for a reason. You can be right across the street and you're in this other little town.
Well,
and
that's how Flint is. Flint is the
well,
way.
That's done that way for a reason, so that for situations like this. So you got Gulfport over here getting their water from a place where it's not contaminated, and then you got Gaucher with the brown water like Flint, Michigan, and it's poisoned with something. We don't know what until they tell you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sarah, did you hear that in not only in Jackson, Mississippi, but in St. Joseph Parish in Louisiana, their water has been coming out bubbly and red since before Flint?
Well, it's been like that all over because I was reading about Central Louisiana. That's where my husband is from, the central part of Louisiana. And they also have issues because a lot of the timber industry and a lot of the logging industry, you see, white people have made a concerted effort to show that they're not connected to this land and to this ecosystem because everywhere they have theft their feet, they have totally destroyed it. Because we have not been driving automobiles for that long. And within less than 100 years, they have managed to contaminate a whole river system. And Michigan, just like Minnesota, it have a lot of lakes and streams and waterways. And these people have managed to contaminate it. You have Lake Huron. You have, Lake Superior. You have all these different lakes. You have right up there. And you mean to tell me these people, they just did it on purpose. Something is wrong with these damn Europeans. Something is wrong with them. And I just wish that some, you know, spaceship or whatever, that, you know, mothership that took them down, like Muhammad and his wheel, he needs to come and collect these people and take them back up there on that wheel with him. Because it's going to be a wheel. Well, you need to bring this wheel and you need to take them on up there with you because this is unconscionable. I can't believe it.
That's true. And Sarah, you are so true about Minnesota because all you guys got to do is look back to about, oh gosh, when was it? Maybe 6 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
3M is here and they were contaminating the river with this stuff called, wait a minute, is that the company? They were contaminating the river with what's called pleurofluorocarbons, PFCs. Look it up. They fired the woman that blew the whistle, a dear friend of mine. She was a lady from Iran, actually. Dr. Fredine. And I haven't talked to her in several years because she left after they, you know, really did this coup on her. Now, as soon as they fired her and she made a settlement and she lost her home and everything, which is what they really like to do to people who are saying things that they don't like them to say.
The whistleblowers are totally destroyed.
And so she's gone. But guess what? And I'm going to be real honest with you guys. The people that were poisoned most, frankly speaking, they were not black people. They were the white people that lived near that river section, and they had and did all the research on it. She did it.
They had the highest level of cancer in that community. Now, it's like another Love Canal, but probably never hit national news. But this woman lost her everything, her livelihood, her, and it was just a charade around here. And yet, they bumped her out, brought in a white individual. Ultimately, the environmental protection head was fired. Cheryl, can't think of her last name right now, but she was fired, went off somewhere, was okay with that, because Fardeen kept telling them, look, you're poisoning the river, because she was studying fish. You're poisoning the river. You're going to poison the people. This stuff doesn't get out of the river system for, I can't remember the exact number of years, but it's a really long time, like hundreds and hundreds of years. And so they were poisoned. Those people, I don't know if they got anything to help them with that, but it was really a bad situation. So
see, white people don't mind killing off a few of their own, as long as they can get millions of other people of so-called color, the Native American and Black people, because we have always been the target that they want to get, because we sit on all of the resources that they want on this planet. So if they kill off, you know, a few white people as collateral damage, oh well, so be it. You know, they gotta go. But we want to get rid of the niggers, and we want to get rid of these so-called Native Americans. They're the ones,
right? The Native Americans have been harmed, yep, a lot around here with the things that were going on. But yeah, it's really bad. It was really bad. And
okay, let's take this caller. Caller Tia.
Yes. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome. I'm fine. How are you? Thank you so much for taking my call. Good evening to everyone. This is a wonderful show. I listen from time to time. It's really good. I wanted to say a few things. I guess first starting with the water. I live in Memphis now because I go to school, but I'm from New York. And I remember as a little girl, my family always told me, because we have family in New Jersey, never drink the water in New Jersey. I'm almost 40. I've heard that ever since I was a little kid. I don't know what they've done in New Jersey. And I don't know what they've done across the nation with this water. And we do have to be careful. And for those who have social media and stuff, they need to take pictures of these water and put this on their Facebook page instead of their boyfriends and girlfriends and all that, so people can see what's going on where you are. I think that's kind of pretty important.
Very solid.
Absolutely.
Second, especially with the situation in Flint, they talk about they don't have any schools, but they do have universities. And I'm very surprised that the students there haven't complained about this water. Because there is a residence hall at the University of Michigan Flint, which is a public university. And I teach students, and they complain about doing homework. They complain about everything. And the fact that these students there have not complained about the water makes me think, do they have a different source of water? And did that school know? And if the school know, being a public school, that's further indictment to the government there of Michigan. This is a public school. They have a residence hall. And these students are not complaining about the water, unless no one lives in a residence hall. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly right about that. I wish I had a thought about that when I was in Flint 2 weeks ago, because I did pass right by that campus. There's right downtown by, it's right there by the Flint River and Martin Luther King Drive. That's a good point, though. I like what you said about people need to post their water, because it's in St. Joseph. I heard New Jersey's water is contaminated. Somewhere in Ohio, I think it's Sebring, Ohio. So there are a number of places that have this contamination. Well, even in Texas, Texas has high levels of radiation in the water. So, I mean,
especially if it's a different color. I mean,
You can smell it in the water, especially where y'all stay on that side of Houston, where those oil refineries are. Y'all got some of the worst water over there, because y'all are right there on the refinery. And I'm from the East Coast, and now, as the caller said, from Jersey, you can smell that from the minute you hit Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey. They have all those oil refineries up there. And you don't want to drink nothing up there, because you can smell that sulfur, that nasty odor. It lingers in the air. Whenever I go there to visit relatives, I'm so glad to get the heck away from there, because you could just, that odor comes off from that refinery. Because you have Arco, you have Citgo in Jersey, you have Arco right there in Pennsylvania. You got all, what's next, ConocoPhillips. You have so many different refineries that's right there in that tri-state area. That it is very, very bad for the environment and bad for people who live in out there. So you shouldn't drink or eat nothing coming out the rivers out of, in those areas.
That's true.
Okay, hello.
Well, thank you so much, Carla.
Hello, I wasn't finished. I'm sorry. Hello.
Yes, you can hear you.
Okay, I guess then, because you talked about a lot of things. I guess Donald Trump... Well, that's a whole another issue. But again, being from New York, I heard about him since I was a little girl. And the first thing I heard was that he was an adulterer. They put a movie about it. Suddenly, this movie is not on YouTube. Any old movie you can find on YouTube. But there, I know when I was a little kid, there was a movie made about him being an adulterer. All of a sudden, this has disappeared. This man is wonderful and great. I don't know how he has fooled the rest of America. But if you are from New York, for real, New York City, for real, you know... I mean, you just know something's not right with him. That's a whole other issue. Another important issue relating to that. There was an article, I think it might have been today, but recently in USA Today, talk about him and David Duke and how, I guess 20 years ago when David Duke was more popular, well, more known about, he said, oh, I denounced that. He's running on angry, blah, blah, blah. But now he's running on the same thing. So I really think he did study that. And I heard that he read this book about Ben Tillman, who was a white supremacist in South Carolina. So I said, you know, there's kind of proof to say, I guess that he's a supremacist. And then Melissa Harris Perry, when I was young, she still has a job, but I made a foolish error and just quit my job because I was mad. I was in my 20s. You don't do that. You, like you said, you get what you can get. Her contract was almost up. I heard she was getting paid in the millions. She should have read her contract thoroughly, did what she wanted to do on the side, and then if they had something about that, then if they wanted to try to fire her, they're like, look, my contract is up in October. Just keep paying me until October. I can say what I want to say. Because, yes, she has a good job at Wake Forest, but she wasn't getting paid as much as she was doing on TV. Because I'm going into academia. And I don't care how good you are, you're not getting paid $1 million in academia. That's not how it is. That's not how.
Well, if you're getting paid in the millions, though, common sense would tell you that this is not gonna last forever. And one of the things you need to do is, like the sister said earlier on the clip, you know, nestle away some of the money so maybe you don't have to. You know, live a little normal life so you don't have to really work and worry about that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also, that's her hissy fit or whatever is a sure sign that her mother is white, because that is strict white girl move. And they can get away with it, and we can't.
But it's not only that. With Melissa Harris Perry, as I mentioned on, you know, Scotty Reed's show, yeah, she has a professorship, but she does lectures. She does a lot of this feminism kick that she's been on, and she do a lot of lecturing. She writes books, so she get additional income coming from that, in addition to what she make as a professor, and plus what she did on the TV gig. Yeah, she pulled that little white girl move, and you know, throwing that tantrum, and it comes from her mother being white and her mother raising her as a typical white girl be raised, but she seems to be forgetting that. When the white people at MSNBC, whenever they look at her, just like with Barack Obama, it brings up all the anger in them, because all they see is the evidence of a white woman that went out there and had sex with a black man, and these are the products of it. So they can't get to this white woman, but we're going to get to your offspring, and we're going to show you, we're going to take it out on these doggone children. And that's what happened with Melissa Harris Perry. And I guess she just didn't realize that these people don't really care for her, because they're mad at her mother. And they're going to take it out.
Well,
her. They can't get to her mother.
You know, but the thing is, if you're a biracial child, if you're a biracial child and you're raised by a white mother, there's no way for you to have anything except your white mother's rearing, just like Barack Obama has his grandmother, white grandmother's rearing. They raised them, so they do have a different perspective than those of us who had two black parents or what have you. And so she is, for all practical purposes, she has been enculturated as a white woman. And her mindset is that of a white woman. So it's not that she didn't forget anything. She never was taught that. She didn't know that. But she probably, this is probably her teaching, her tuition and knowing and understanding that a little better now. Because there's no way her mom could have taught her that. And I have several white friends. I have several white friends. Now, let me say this. Those children that are biracial and they have been raised by a black mother, because there are black women who have white husbands. See, the mother is the one who's raising the child. The children who were raised by black mothers kind of understand that a little differently, because their mother, if she has a black consciousness, because some don't, chances are they understand that a little better. Because the mother, the female, is the one that's raising the children, usually.
That is quite true, because, yes, the mothers are the teachers, and you're quite correct with, you know, with the difference in the parenting. But, and then again, with her, which is true with white women, because I've seen it all the time, because it's white women who come up with all of these titles about biracial or multiracial, and my child ain't black, you know, because... even though the child might look black, but they still want to straddle the fence or want to confuse the children and say, okay, well, you mixed race or you biracial, all that kind of foolishness. So these children, they grew up with all, because you can watch them on this Harris Perry show. I tried watching a few of her shows, and it's always lukewarm, because when it comes to hard-hitting stuff with racism or whatever, it's like she don't want to come up hard because of her mother.
Right, she can't do it.
She don't want to indict her mother, because when she can say racism and all these racist white people, you're talking about your own mother. So she can't say those things. So that is why I never really paid much attention to her, because I just know she was out there. You got a so-called biracial mixed race man in the White House. They get all that Karen Finney. She's also have a white mother. So they get all these people out here, you know, these racially ambiguous people. And they had a good go at it for the past 7-8 years to Barack Obama. Now he's no longer there. They're getting rid of them. As Yvette says, they're doing the purge. Al Sharpton is doing what, you know, they're knocking down to one day in the week. So they got rid of Ed Schultz because they don't want people to say, okay, well, we got rid of all the black people and nobody white. So, okay, so we went ahead and, you know, they got rid of Ed. Swapping all those, because they don't mind sacrificing a white person just so that they don't get hit up with, you know, you being racist, you only get with all the black people. They don't keep Rachel Maddow because she's gay and she's white and she's a woman. So they got like, what, three different things out to her. A white woman, a gay woman, and you know, all of that to get out of Rachel Maddow. I never really care for her anyway because I don't like her.
We have Brother Brown on the line, too. Thank you, caller. Did you have another comment for us?
No, that's all. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And Memphis is my hometown. Okay, Brother Brown?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Brother Brown. What's going on?
Oh, baby, I've been sick. I had a lot of family problems after my uncle died, and I apologize for not being on. It was just been a lot of stress on me, you know.
Aww.
Back from Arlington, Virginia, back and forth, back and forth. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm going to say this to the listening audience. Please, if we can, get some insurance. It's essential that we get enough insurance, because I have seen too many people in the last 3 months that have passed away and they don't have insurance. It's real sad when a family does not have enough to do anything for their loved ones when they pass. And you know, they have crematories now, they have different elements that you can pay for. But and I'm not saying spend all your money on a situation like, but it's going to come to all of us one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not born to live forever, not physically. But put aside a little bit of change, don't cost that much. and take care of your loved ones. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was,
it's been very stressful on me, you know, and I'm just trying to recuperate.
Yeah.
Oh, you have our condolences. Yeah. I'm sorry you're going through that.
Yeah.
It's rough,
yeah,
though, at those times. It's really rough.
Mm-hmm. And you're trying to take care of yourself, and then you're running back and forth.
Yeah.
Going to these funerals and taking care of your family, Brother Brown.
Yeah. It's been rough on the old boy, but I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in
there.
You're
tough. You're tough. Yeah. You can do
yeah.
it. All things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. With the spirit of your ancestor.
That's the only thing keeping me going.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, Owen, because my husband had an uncle right up here in Dallas that passed, and it was the same situation. Didn't have any insurance, and we had to pass the plate
mm-hmm.
in order to get the money together in order to do the funeral. It was a good thing that the funeral home, they said, okay, we're going to take a payment plan. They went ahead and they did the funeral and everything, and we just put them on a payment plan until we got it
right.
paid off within about 3 months. So it is
right.
quite true.
Yeah.
That's right.
Let me play this clip right here from Brother Umar. He's talking about what the people in Flint should do.
Still getting their water from a poisoned water supply. You see, that's intentional. You see, this is genocide that's taking place. Not only that, what I told the brothers and sisters in Flint was that you guys need to get a cadre of attorneys, and you need to put together a class action human rights lawsuit against the United States government, as well as the state of Michigan, as well as the municipality of Flint. That is a human rights violation, and as far as I'm concerned, it meets the definition of genocide. The United Nations definition of genocide talks about any type of intentional or unintentional, and that's the key, intentional or unintentional situation that leads to a gross amount of loss of life or destabilization of quality of life. If you look at the definition of genocide, the Flint water crisis meets that. But I'm not hearing anyone in Flint talk about a human rights lawsuit, a class action lawsuit. They are entitled to reparations. The blacks in Flint are entitled to reparations for being consistently and systematically over decades. This is not new. We're just finding about it now, but it's been going on. They're entitled to reparations for crimes against humanity. No one's talking about it. On top of that, the motor giant in Flint, and I forget which company, GM, whichever one is based in Flint, they're responsible for the poisoning of the water, because what they were doing was taking their toxic waste and putting it in the water. The city knew, the state knew, the government knew. No one did nothing about it. This goes back almost 100 years since the founding of the automobile. No one did anything about it. So guess what? There should be a lawsuit against them, the auto manufacturer being complicit with the state, the local municipality, as well as the federal government. No one's talking lawsuits. No one's talking crime against humanity. No one's talking genocide. Wiggle, you know, because she just got in office. I think she cares. But here's the thing. Politics is a machine. No one person changes it. And here's the issue with the black politicians. They need to be honest about that. Stop making black people think you're going to win this election, get into office, and then all of a sudden start making all these changes. Stop making black people. Tell the truth. Listen, y'all, I really don't have any power. I really don't have any authority. I'm going to do the best that I can by my community. But there's really no guarantee. If you're honest about it, nobody will be disappointed in you when you fail. But when you sell black people a false bill of goods about how you're going to change the city and change this and change that, when your campaign was financed by the people who corrupted the city, then you're not serious. So we need more honesty in politics. Stop giving out false promises. See, and that's a big issue in American politics at all. Collectively, 40% of Americans do not vote. 40%. See, people talk about black people don't vote. White people don't vote. Let's understand something. Rich people don't need to vote because money controls politics. So it don't matter who wins. I'm going to do what I want to do because I got the money to pay them all. Poor people don't vote because they know nothing on the electoral agenda is about poor people. Look at this now. Guess who votes? Middle class people. And because black people are largely concentrated amongst the poor, poor people don't vote. So black people don't.
Thank you.
Most people have heard of the Electoral College during presidential election years. But what exactly is the Electoral College? Simply said, it is a group of people appointed by each state who formally elect the president and vice president of the United States. To understand how this process began and how it continues today, we can look at the Constitution of the United States. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 of the Constitution. It specifies how many electors each state is entitled to have. Since 1964, there have been 538 electors in each presidential election. How did they decide on the number 538? Well, the number of electors is equal to the total voting membership of the United States Congress, 435 representatives plus 100 senators and 3 electors from the District of Columbia. Essentially, the Democratic candidate and Republican candidate are each trying to add up the electors in every state so that they surpass 270 electoral votes, or just over half of 538 votes, and win the presidency. So how do states even get electoral votes? Each state receives a particular number of electors based on population size. The census is conducted every 10 years, so every time the census happens, states might gain or lose a few electoral votes. Let's say you're a voter in California, a state with 55 electoral votes. If your candidate wins in California, they get all 55 of the state's electoral votes. If your candidate loses, they get none. This is why many presidential candidates want to win states like Texas, Florida, and New York. If you currently add up the electoral votes of those three states, you would have 96 electoral votes. Even if a candidate won North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and West Virginia, they would only gain 31 electoral votes total from those eight states. Here is where it can get a little tricky. On a rare occasion, like in the year 2000, someone can win the popular vote, but fail to gain 270 electoral votes. This means that the winner may have won and collected their electoral votes by small margins, winning just enough states with just enough electoral votes, but the losing candidate may have captured large voter margins in the remaining states. If this is the case, the very large margins secured by the losing candidate in the other states would add up to over 50% of the ballots cast nationally. Therefore, the losing candidate may have gained more than 50% of the ballots cast by voters, but failed to gain 270 of the electoral votes. Some critics of the Electoral College argue the system gives an unfair advantage to states with large numbers of electoral votes. Think of it this way. It is possible for a candidate to not get a single person's vote, not one vote, in 39 states or the District of Columbia, yet be elected president by winning the popular vote in just 11 of these 12 states: California, New York, Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Georgia, or Virginia. This is why both parties pay attention to these states. However, others argue that the Electoral College protects small states such as Rhode Island, Vermont, and New Hampshire, and even geographically large states with small populations, like Alaska, Wyoming, and the Dakotas. That's because a candidate can't completely ignore small states, because in a close election, every electoral vote counts. There are certain states that have a long history of voting for a particular party. These are known as safe states. For the past four election cycles, in 1996, 2000, 2004, and 2008, Democrats could count on states like Oregon, Maryland, Michigan, and Massachusetts, whereas the Republicans could count on states like Mississippi, Alabama, Kansas, and Idaho. States that are teetering between parties are called swing states. In the past four election cycles, Ohio and Florida have been swing states, twice providing electoral votes for a Democratic candidate and twice providing electoral votes for a Republican candidate. Think about it. Do you live in a safe state? If so, is it a Democratic or Republican safe state? Do you live in a swing state? Are your neighboring states swing or safe? Is the population in your state increasing or decreasing? And do not forget, when you're watching the electoral returns on election night every 4 years and the big map of the United States is on the screen, know that the magic number is 270 and start adding.
Okay. That's interesting.
Awesome.
Even an idiot ought to understand that.
Yeah, we gotta be educated about this voting now. You know, they say your vote counts. Brother Brown, does your vote count? Dorothy Dunning.
Stop, Cher. Oh, so.
Does your vote count?
I've been telling you how they trick people with their voting machine.
Get out.
Is Delta on the line? Is Delta on?
Delta's on the line. Delta's
come on, Delta. Report, hello. Report, huh?
How y'all doing tonight?
Really?
Delta, why you sounding so dry and dull? What's going on?
You don't feel good? Got allergy mixed up?
No, I don't feel good tonight. That's why I'm not doing a lot of focus. But let me give you, I don't know, I wasn't on, I just got on, but I wanted to bring up about the police, if I can give this topic, the police, the mother and father had, he had three daughters, and I think she may have had four kids, but they lived together, and they was going out for the weekend, and they got their mother to keep the kids, and they had been, and this is in California, I'm sorry, I sent everybody a text of it, and they had got the mother to keep the kids, and they must have been drinking because they pulled their car over to the
side
of the road.
Well, now, don't say they must have been if we don't know, because we don't want to.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, let me say what they said. Okay.
They said they were drinking on the Love Place radio show.
Yeah, you're right. I think they said that.
We don't know that.
And they was on. Somebody called and said a suspicious car. They wasn't doing anything. They pulled to the side of the road. It was like at 3 something in the morning. Somebody saw the car. And when the police got there, this is what the police said. They was asleep and they was unconscious. Now this is they said they was unconscious. They couldn't wake them up. And they looked through the window. Now, this is the law talking. They looked through the window, and they saw a gun. And they stepped back. Then you already saw them went up there and said that they was unconscious. But then they looked. They said they had a gun. And next thing you know, they shoot in this car so many times. And killed this man, this black man and black girl. They killed both of them. So I want to know how somebody, if you said they unconscious, and you go up to the car and you say you still gone, but yet you said they unconscious, and you order them out of a car, but you keep a hollering they unconscious. And they killed both of this boy and girl. I think the one was 32 and one was 30. And they both dead.
When did this happen?
It happened Saturday night.
Man. You see, I'll
send you the text, Sarah. Yeah.
Maybe they had an illness can cause you to have to get over and go to sleep. Maybe they were sick.
Yeah, they wasn't bothering anybody.
Maybe it could have been, who knows, why they were.
Some people suffer from dropsy. They can't drive for a certain distance, and then you get drowsy, and you got to pull over and, you know, get some rest. But I'm sure, you see, this is the police that did the killing, and they're also being the ones to give the report. So, do they have a body camera or something that somebody could go by and look at?
That's what everybody's asking. This is, you said it right, Phil. That's what everybody asked.
That's what the family's asking. You mean to tell me that you saying they was unconscious and they couldn't move? Now they saying this. They saying they was unconscious and they was out. Well, why would you shoot them in the car? They ain't sick. They asked the family, asked them about
the body camera. Did they find a gun? Did they find a gun in the car? Was a gun found?
They saying that there was a gun in the car. I'm just going by the article. They said it was a gun.
But did they show what an evidence like after they got the body?
No, that's what the family is. That's how it's on the scene. That's what the family are complaining about. The family saying they telling them all this. They ain't showed them no body camera. They ain't showed them nothing. But this is what they said. One man decided that they was a threat. Now, they had been there, and they couldn't wake them up. And the one man, this one particular man, started shooting, from my understanding. If you read the article, this one particular man. And they shot in his car and killed those folks.
Okay, that's enough of the tales of the crypt. Okay, I can't do it. Tales from the crypt. We got it. Mm. Now, give us an update on, you said some lawyers came in and tried to offer.
Okay. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Back in 2007, they had, in Mississippi, where I live, and especially in Moss Point is a predominantly black city.
That's right.
They noticed that a lot of people started coming down with cancer at a very, very high rate. And they noticed that people started having lesions, like on the body. So, but a white lady filed a lawsuit. And she said it was due to the water and the chemicals from the water. So what happened was, after they filed the lawsuit, the lady, they saying, we have a bunch of chemical plants in Moss Point. They brought all these things and dumped them in Moss Point in the black community. And now
somebody's
they say,
moving around and breathing. Somebody's moving and breathing. We can't hardly hear Mother Dunning.
Now they're saying that it's coming from all these chemical plants. So now they have filed a class action lawsuit. But now this is the strangest thing. My sister went to work, and my sister said that a white lady was saying on the job that they finna pay all these people off, so we didn't think nothing about it. So my sister said that one day, 2 days later, now the white folks is coming to a church in Moss Point, and they come into church and slipped my mind. I'll call the church in a few minutes. But anyway, they got a big meeting at this church on Friday night at Restoration. They come into Restoration in Moss Point on 2nd Street. They are coming there Saturday night, and they bringing in all these lawyers, and they want to, they're going to talk about the water, and they're going to talk about all these people getting sick and all this epidemic of cancer. So we heard that the white lady told my sister on the job that they were going to pay everybody off and give everybody money. So I feel like that they looking at Michigan, now they don't got scared, and now they trying to come in and get these people to take a little change and sign these papers, and that's going to be the end of it. Now, that's my theory. I believe they trying to do. So we got a big meeting Saturday night at this church in Moss Point at 7 o'clock.
And is it for everybody or just the white people?
No, it's in the black neighborhood, but the white lady, some kind of way, she knows, she was you know, I don't know how they know,
she
but
knew,
some
she
kind
knew
of way.
It, yeah, before the rest of y'all did.
That is correct. So
I tried to tell you something was wrong with y'all's water when I was there.
And, so I mean to say that they might already got their check already. Some of them white folks, Daddy, she already been.
You know,
I got to get a bigger check than the rest of y'all.
True.
They ain't gonna tell.
Always.
Let me add something here right quick. What they normally do if they file a class action lawsuit at the beginning, like Cheryl said, they have gotten the bulk of the money.
Already.
So what they're going to do, they're going to pull all these people together. They're going to come up with some figures because the chemical companies got $1 billion insurance policies. And they're going to go ahead and they're going to tell all the black people who've been affected that because there's so many people that's been affected, that they don't give y'all a spike.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the end of it. That's
mm-hmm.
going to be it. And in reference to what Umar said about Flint, Michigan, this is what we as a unit of educated people have to do. Now, everybody may not know the law, but one thing I found out in my endeavors in the legal system, get it in there. It don't take a rocket scientist all the time or a high profile lawyer to just get the case in federal court and get publicity. Mm-hmm. See, once you get that case in that court and you get it in the eyesight of the media, okay, somebody's gonna come along and say, guess what? I need to make a name for myself. That's how you deal with these cases like that. See, that's what should have been done with the black people in various areas. Go ahead and get in federal court. Once you get in federal court, the judge has got to hear it. He's got to listen to it. He's not going to throw it off the docket. But we have too many educated people in our community that sit back and want to be shot callers. Help these people file a suit.
Help them file a suit. That's what I always say, Brother Brown.
Yeah, don't sit back and say, well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, why is it just now that people are even entertaining the idea of the class action lawsuit? Because, I mean, it seems like you said, Mother Hattie, they didn't know the water was contaminated. So what took so long?
No, they didn't. Let me tell you, like somebody said earlier, if the white man says this is good water and this water is brown and this water is okay to drink and this is just some copper here or this is just a metal, heavy metal water, that's the only thing black folks believe in. Anybody would know not to drink that water. You better go buy you some water.
Well, not just the water that's got to live. We got to check these older houses. See, the majority of our people rent. And they rent, and sometimes they rent in houses that was built before a certain period of time.
Q&A.
For in our community, and help all our young people that's got babies that's living in these houses get their children tested for lead. Don't cost nothing.
And that's true, because you got to look at that stuff that they put in that.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff,
yeah, that's right.
That stuff is deadly.
Yeah, I've been exposed to that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of that stuff in a lot of those Detroit public schools. Well, we are up to our final last little minute. Does anyone have any closing comments?
I want to say something about Fred Trump and Woody Guthrie. And just FYI, as Canty said, the Trump name was changed. And I want to say after World War II, Fred Trump, which is Donald Trump's granddaddy, developed over 27,000 rental units using mostly taxpayer money And these units were segregated and was whites only. And Fred Trump ruled over a taxpayer-supported bastion of whiteness. And so this is why Donald, his great-grandson, wants to bring back this whiteness of this peace, I think. So.
Interesting. You have to share that with us again. I wish we had a little more time to expound on that. Any other closing comments?
Well, he's only a second generation Donald Trump. His grandfather and grandmother, they're German immigrants.
Right.
And so he's second generation. So if you can see with him in two generations, look where he's at compared to the rest of us who've been slaving in this country for 400 years. So if you can't tell me that being white doesn't come with power and benefits, man, please.
Exactly. Let me give out my Netflix pick. I meant to do this earlier. If you have Netflix, do stream, what is it, A Ballerina's Tale. And this is a story on, it's a little documentary on Misty Copeland. And she's made history. She's the first African-American to perform the Firebird. And you see, she played Odiletta and Odilla in The Swan. So she is just a magnificent little young woman. And what I really appreciate about her is, although she's one of those little Alicia Keys-looking little black girls, she recognizes her blackness and she praises the black ballerinas that came before her, that preceded her. So she's in touch with her blackness, and I just love it. And in this documentary, she highlights all of these previous black ballerinas. And, I mean, just watching the story, it just moved me so. And the documentary shows how, just like when Venus and Serena began playing tennis, when Missy Copeland began performing at the Met and all of these different places in Italy and Russia, black people wanted to come out and see her dance. And so check that out, A Ballerina's Tale, the story on Misty Copeland. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mother Zola. Thank you, Mother Hattie. Thank you, Canty, King B. Thank you, Brother Brown, Delta. Thank you, Sarah, callers, listeners. Thank you, Scotty, and we will be back on Friday night. Peace and good night, and stay informed.
Yes.
Peace and good night. Yes.